people and businesses in general need to learn about AI agents because?
Because they are coming, they're going to deliver immense value, and you want to be ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it.
In the future, AI agents will be?
Smart, intelligent, capable, and better than you think.
Welcome to Business Biome, the podcast that explores the interconnected world of business ecosystems, co-innovation, and new forms of collaboration to jointly solve problems too complex to solve alone. My name is Nicholas, and together with my guests, I dive deep into these fascinating concepts where corporates, startups, entrepreneurs, and even individuals interact, collaborate, and thrive together. We will uncover the secrets behind successful partnerships, explore the evolving dynamics of co-innovation, and discover how businesses can harness the power of collective intelligence. Follow me and my great guests on this promising journey. Welcome, everybody. We are right jumping into a new Business Biome recording, and I'm really looking forward to today's recording. I have Eric Broda with me, and he will introduce himself in a second, and we will cover, I would say, a really hot topic today, but more on that in a second. And yeah, I would say, Eric, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you, Nicholas.
So where are you at the moment?
I am in Toronto, Canada. We're just at the verge of having a winter come upon us, nice and cool right now.
Awesome. And I think it's a bit earlier than here, I guess. So it's still morning.
Yeah, we're 10:30 in the morning here, roughly 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So you got still a lot of energy, and but same on my side, since I'm really looking forward to our topic today. Before we dive into that, tell us a little bit about you. What are you doing? What's your current role? And then I have, of course, two questions for you.
Sure. Sure. I'll do a very quick intro. I'll try and be brief here. 40 years experience in IT, almost all of that in financial services, a little bit of manufacturing and retail thrown in. I've been an executive at global banks and in global insurance firms. Last 7 years, been running my own boutique consulting firm, Broda Group Software, out of Toronto, Canada. And what we do is we end up building ecosystems for large organizations. So it, obviously, we have expertise in a variety of different technologies related to that, including Gen AI and such, which I'm sure we're going to talk about today. I've also written numerous articles on Medium.com. The most recent one on agentic mesh, I'm sure we're going to touch on. I've written a book with O'Reilly entitled Implementing Data Mesh, and I've implemented Gen AI solutions, API solutions, data mesh solutions at a variety of firms. So that's about me.
Wow, that's quite cool. There is definitely some stuff that we have in common. So yeah, I would say let's cover two more questions that sure. I have for you. The first one is, what are you passionate about?
Well, you can probably see right behind me, there's a guitar and there's a few more over there. So I really enjoy playing guitar. I would not consider myself that high quality a musician, but I do truly enjoy it. So that's kind of, I mean, obviously I stay abreast of technology, enjoy writing articles and such, but guitar and traveling with my family is a passion.
Sounds great. And I mean, like in the introduction or before the recording, I love to play drums. So maybe one day we can join forces.
You never know.
But I have another question for you. What was the most craziest thing that you've ever done?
Most craziest thing. Most people that know me would consider me relatively conservative, I suppose, stoic. So I don't know if I do crazy things, but I will tell you, the best thing I ever did was marry my wife and have my kids, they are the pride and joy of my life. So that's the best thing I've ever done. How about that?
Perfect. And I can fully relate to that. So we also got two kids, two boys, very energetic. Yeah.
A handful.
Yeah, awesome. And I love how we got in contact, because that again came through the network, like Scott Brinker, and shout out to him. He was sharing your article, and I was like immediately jumping onto Medium and walked through it. And I was like, oh, that speaks out of my heart. So I really love to cover that today. And you already mentioned the topic, which is agentic mesh. And you wrote about the future of Gen AI enabled autonomous agent ecosystems. There is a lot maybe many people can't relate to or don't understand immediately. So I would say, let's start very lightweight. And can you let's spend some minutes on explaining the concept of agentic AI, how it differs from traditional AI models in terms of decision making, task execution. Let's start with that.
Yeah, sure. In the article, I'll kind of go through a few high level definitions, but agentic, you know, there's a lot of different things that people attribute that to, but ultimately it means being able to make independent decisions in pursuit of a goal. So agentic AI says we use AI or reasoning, iterative planning to make those decisions and come to address that goal. The idea of autonomous agents, I think everybody's probably heard of agents, but I'm going to kind of qualify it even more, where agents can, you know, that's a very loose term. When I think of autonomous agents, these are systems that can actually use agentic AI reasoning to actually fulfill tasks. And agentic mesh, what the article is actually about, is the fact that I foresee, and I think many others foresee, a world where there will be many more agents, there will be many agents out there. And the big tech giants are figuring out how to build those agents, and they're investing billions and billions of dollars there. So we're going to see agents everywhere. The question is, how do you actually manage those agents? And that's where agentic mesh comes in. It's an ecosystem platform, the notion of a platform and an ecosystem that actually allows agents, autonomous agents, to find each other and safely collaborate, interact, and transact. And that's kind of the basic set of definitions that I think would be good as we progress in our dialogue here.
Perfect. Thanks for that. I mean, I'm familiar with the concept, since, like I mentioned before the recording, that I was working on a concept and a marketplace as well as a registry. So also terms that you use in your article and in the concept in the area of composable enterprise. So you have like small capabilities, well-defined software assets that fulfill a specific task, and you're able to take some of them, because they are kind of best of breed solutions, and put them together. And this new structure pays into a higher use case or a more complex use case. So instead of running monolithic applications where you only use 10 or 20% each, you really only pick those puzzle pieces or pieces of a puzzle that you really need. So that's the analogy I'm having in my mind. And you said that like the big vendors or the big LLMs come up with agents. Just I think 2 days ago, Bloomberg reported that OpenAI will release the operator in January, most probably. So an agent that runs locally, that fulfills tasks in for users, like writing code or some other stuff locally on the system. So But your concept goes beyond that. So it's not like having an agent that does something for me or in my business, that agents communicate with each other. So you came up with the agentic mesh that you already mentioned that goes beyond that. So what was like the trigger, or what inspired you to think like big and maybe 2 or 4 years ahead, or even 5 years ahead of now?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, there's a few announcements that you've highlighted here. OpenAI is coming up with the operator. I think they may rename it to something else in January. But you see things like Agentforce from Salesforce. If you listen to Marc Benioff, and he's been on a few podcasts, he foresees agents that actually act like people. where there used to be people, the analogy is now we're going to have an agent, and that agent will be powered by large language models, and it'll be able to actually access, you know, customer relationship management data. So you have folks like Salesforce doing that. Microsoft has released it's a Microsoft research, by the way, a fantastic agent toolkit, AutoGen, that I think is spectacular. LangChain has their own version of it. Crew AI has a fantastic set of agents. So bottom line is, agents will be, one way or another, some form of agents. I have a particular view as to how they're going to look and how they will behave, but agents will be here. So for me, the question is not, how do we build these agents? The tech giants are going to be figuring that out. They will have ways to do it. They'll have great tutorials, lots of great samples. The question comes, what do you do when you have hundreds of agents in an enterprise, and how do you actually manage those? So for me, the key was, you know, why did I write it? I wanted to get the story out. You know, if agents are coming, what's next? What do we do now? How do we take advantage and maybe be proactive around taking advantage of the tens of billions of dollars that, you know, OpenAI and Microsoft, Meta, a whole raft of companies, Salesforce, how do we actually position ourselves for that? And that's why I kind of wrote the article. So just as a background, if you think about, you know, if you go back a little bit in history, The evolution has been very clear to me anyway. First, we had services and APIs, and we had a service mesh that allowed services to interact, find each other, interact, and transact. Next, we had data mesh. So we had data products, many of them, and we needed a data mesh to actually provide the ecosystem capability around those many data products. So to me, it was very clear that with agents in an ecosystem of agents, you're going to need a mesh type capability. So agentic mesh captured the term of the agent ecosystem. So I wrote this as first off as an analogy from past behavior and seeing what's actually going to happen, and found that it actually addressed where I thought the future was actually going, where we will see agents in some way, shape, or form everywhere. And I think there's a unique need in the market to actually figure out how we're going to manage that ecosystem, that growing ecosystem of agents. So that's kind of where I ended up, the rationale for writing the article, actually.
Perfect. Yeah. And I fully see the analogy, with some additional challenges or questions that need to be addressed, I would say, phrasing it that way. But I don't want to, how shall I phrase that? I don't want to tell that's too early to talk about that. I think it's quite the opposite. It's great to have such a people like you thinking about that right now, even though many, many people are still into prompting only and not dealing with agents so far. But those analogies should like tell us how the agent mesh could work, how agents can collaborate with each other, distributing tasks and pieces of information. And one question that I had in mind, again, based on the composable enterprise project I was working in, since there was like the big question regarding mindset, of course, do I really want to open up my capability? In our case, it's like the agent for others to make use of. And what does that mean? Because I'm fully responsible for that piece of tech that's running somewhere. And the second thought that I had immediately was like, now I have an agent mesh and a couple of agents that I control, maybe, that decide to communicate with agents that come from external parties. So that means some data is flowing there. So what are your thoughts or your ideas around these two things, like mindset as well as the data that's flowing to some agent and is not directly controlled by a human being?
Yeah, so I think there's a broader discussion around the human in the loop and where they fit and what the role is, and I think we'll touch on that a little bit later. But I think in terms of the mindset, I think there's two ways you can look at this. you know, the glass, as they say, can be half full or it could be half empty. And in some cases, yeah, there you go. Mine also. But, you know, first off, I think there is, in my view, an inevitability around agents. So the question is not, and it's not how I avoid them or how do I not think about them. The question is where do I fit? So I think the mindset in one shape, form, or another will evolve. And I do think it's a fair comment to say agents may take some jobs and it may create a whole bunch of jobs. I don't know the degree to which that will happen and whether more jobs will be created before jobs are lost. I don't know. I'm an optimist, and I believe that the end outcome will be that people will become, they'll have a superpower, if you will. And they will become much, much more productive, which in my hope will be, you know, faster time to market for products in an enterprise, reduced cost through improved productivity, being able to deliver more products into more markets. So that's kind of my cup half full perspective on where things are going and the mindset the folks should probably consider. And it's fair, by the way, that there could be good debates in this. On the data side, you highlighted a little bit of, I would characterize it as a privacy or a security consideration. Here's how I would address that. Whatever we did 20 years ago, 10 years ago with APIs or event streaming or whatever, the whole notion of having secure communications, that's a problem that has actually been solved. So whether it's mutual TLS or any other technology. So the technical foundations are there for us to have secure communications. I think the question, though, is more of a question around not necessarily security, as I mentioned, the technical aspects. And then there's things that say, you know, we can use role-based access control and various different technical techniques to actually safeguard that data. But I think the question really is around privacy in the future. How do we actually ensure that agents are trustworthy enough to actually be able to handle what will be very, very sensitive and sometimes very confidential data? Imagine a health agent handling health data, some of the most sensitive information that a person has. So there has to be not only the technical foundations for security, but one of the things I talk about in my article is this whole notion around trustworthiness and how do we actually engender trustworthiness into agents? So this whole, what we've done with my clients is various different situations, mind you, is we engender trustworthiness through a variety of different mechanisms. Again, security, bottom line, that's table stakes. But simple things like social feedback. I like what this capability does. We've also introduced, we flip governance on its head where it's not necessarily the governance, central governance organization comes up with the policies and then the police the policies. What we think with agents is agents are delegated responsibility. They will have an owner that is responsible for what they do. And it would be the responsibility of the owner to publish the policies that it adheres to, whether it's, you know, GDPR, HIPAA, PII, whatever. And then it's the owner's accountability on behalf of that agent to certify that it actually adheres to its purpose and its policies. So that's a notion that I touch on. I'll have a subsequent article that actually goes on into detail on that. But this whole notion of trustworthiness and certification of an agent. And by the way, all of these concepts are not necessarily new. Maybe there's a new application here, but the whole notion of certification has been out for a long, long time. In Canada, we have the Canadian Standards Organization. In the U.S., it's the Underwriters Laboratory. But if you look at like a toaster, simple thing like a toaster, there's a brand. In Canada, we have a little CSA on it. What that says, simply put, is that toaster has been certified that it's not going to burn your house down. So what we foresee actually is that same notion, that same accreditation process, that same third-party due diligence will be applied to agents. So we will have whatever organization does it, but we'll have a little brand associated with that agent that says it's trustworthy and it actually can handle the data that you've talked about, sensitive data. So I think there's a few things coming. I think there's still some thought that needs to be put into that. The whole idea around ethical behavior and being able to certify ethical behavior is a field that I think there's going to be a lot of research and a lot of new things coming out of very, very soon, Nicholas.
Quite cool. Thanks for sharing. And I'm also fully with you. It's like, not specifically everything is kind of new, but I like that you just took something that was already there, some parts of it at least, and applied it to the new concepts. Since coming back to the composable enterprise with the capabilities, we had some similar approaches for the blueprints and also for the certification, so that you get a piece of quality at the end and not some low quality capability that's faulty and has a lot of bugs in there and doesn't follow certain security and privacy standards. So in your case, what I have in mind, of course, is like also when you want to publish an app in one of the app stores, whether it's in on the Google side of things, in Android or in iOS, you have to go through a certification process and you have to
absolutely
meet the requirements. And if you don't meet them, there won't be your app in the store. So
yeah, absolutely. Like the whole concept of trust, I think is I think some people don't recognize it, but it's implied. So you mentioned the App Store. So I always like to say I stand on the shoulders of giants, the folks who came up with all these cool ideas well before me. And maybe I just applied them a little bit differently. But you know, the whole notion of a store, the App Store. There's a reason why it's not just the phone, the iPhone, that is so popular, but it's what you can do with it and the apps that are on there. But nobody's going to download an app, especially a sensitive one, unless it's certified, unless it's trusted. So the whole notion of trust, like I said, I used the Underwriters Lab and the standards organization in Canada. But the App Store is another example of trust. And the fact that trust has generated an industry and made Apple, I think they're probably the second biggest company in the world now, NVIDIA took over, but made them one of the largest companies in the world as a result of taking trust seriously. As the agent ecosystem evolves, we will need to, or somebody, the most successful company, probably the next biggest company in the world, will be the company that engenders trust in agents and makes them easy to access. And like I said, with in the article in Agentic Mesh, we have a whole bunch of components that allow us to do that. You mentioned the marketplace. That's the App Store for agents. The registry is like a directory service that allows agents to find each other and then interact and transact. It's much more than just a simple directory service like DNS or anything like that. It actually contains metadata. There's conversation management that is baked into the whole ecosystem. So there's a variety of capabilities that enable safe collaboration and safety and interaction and transaction.
Yeah, and there is one more thing that also comes to my mind. Like, there is one more thing since you talked about Apple. Sorry for that. The human in the loop portion. So I know it from some of the frameworks that you mentioned, like with LangChain, and also most of the no-code, low-code tools have some functionality where you have to allow the use of a certain tool, which is the human in the loop. You mentioned also the like or dislike, where you get the feedback from the user. What about if you have agents that really autonomously decide which other agent to use? I know in your article you talk about policies that can be defined. What about those aspects where there is maybe no human in the loop and everything runs kind of automatically?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I want to contrast how people do it today and how I think it'll evolve. So today, and I hesitate calling this agents or autonomous. I hesitate calling it autonomous agents. But today, folks are on ChatGPT or Claude or any other tool, and they're asking questions in a natural language way, and they're getting some responses. And these LLMs are given new tools. They can access the internet. You know, there's a variety of different, they can ingest documents, there's a whole bunch of things. But ultimately, what ends up happening is the human in the loop is directly attached to the LLM, if you will. As you highlighted, with autonomous agents, that tethering of the two is separated. And in fact, we envision a world where agents can actually, autonomous agents can actually get a simple request from a person in natural language, decompose that into steps, and then based off of the information in the registry, understand which other agents can actually be identified for each of those steps, because the registry also has information about what that other agent expects in terms of communication parameters and such, that primary agent, if you will, if I want to call it that, will actually be able to interact automatically with other agents. That is something that we're working on with some folks, and I'm having a variety of discussions, but that is where everybody is actually, at least the big tech giants, are moving towards. Now, coming back to your question, where is the human in the loop in this? In that context, it's very much like the analogy in an organization is a manager. So if I'm the CEO, I'm probably not building cars. I'm not on the assembly line. If I'm the head of Google, I'm not writing algorithms for search, but I have a team of people that actually do that. If I'm running a department in an organization, I may be a manager, an executive, a VP, whatever, and I have people that do the work. So we're very comfortable delegating responsibility. That analog in the real world is there. So what I see, though, in terms of human interaction is people will have agents. They will become managers of agents. And those managers will be responsible just in the real world. They'll be responsible for performance. They'll be responsible for guiding the agents and making sure that they do the right thing. They will look at it for acceptable behavior. And if necessary, they'll terminate the agent if it continues to do unacceptable behavior. But what they have now is they have a superpower, okay, that is probably better, faster, cheaper at simpler tasks, and even now more complicated tasks that a team of people may have done in the past, but now it's a team of agents. So the role of the human in the loop will be that of a manager. And like all managers, they govern and they're responsible and they're accountable for the performance and behavior of their agent. And obviously also responsible for the benefit that people derive from it. So they're going to be one step removed, if you will, from the actual work, but they will be guiding it. So we foresee things, for example, tools within the agentic mesh and probably other concepts where humans will be able to track in real time what the agents are actually doing. So they will have the tools at their disposal, just like managers in the real world today, to manage their agents in an effective way. So I see the human in loop there for at least the foreseeable future. Mind you, my crystal ball gets foggy anytime. It gets pretty foggy even 2 years out. But that's where I see things actually evolving, which I think is going to provide, like I said, I call it a superpower. They will drive productivity for people and make them much more effective.
Yeah, it's so fun to talk about that. Since you mentioned like watching the agents work at the end, I built a multi-agent system for supporting our sales process, and we're going to extend that next month, and we bring more people in here. I don't want to advertise that, but it's cool to work on that because I have a supervisor note in there that like distributes the tasks. And there is a quality or supervisor agent and a quality control agent at the end of that flow. And you can just see how they interact and how the response and the result becomes better and better after each iteration. But my question still is like, what do I need to integrate there to be able to pause that process for a second to put in more of my feedback so that the result even gets better? because there is some piece of information missing or some hallucination happening, which can always occur. So that always came to my mind. But like you said, seeing them and supervising them, like and see what they achieve is like, it makes fun to a certain extent.
Yeah. Well, the dashboard. Another analogy is in Canada, we have DoorDash skip the dishes. But the cool thing about it is you can track, and Uber does this. If you use Uber, you can actually track the car and the delivery literally on the streets, and you can see where they are. That's the type of tooling that a manager will actually have in the future, at least the future that I see, as they manage their agents. I think the sophistication of the tools today are not there by any stretch. But, a necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. They will come, and we're going to see some really cool and exciting things.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, I love that you work with these analogies. And talking about applications and maybe making more uses of analogies, let's look a bit into the future. What are industries where you say these technologies make total sense, or areas like sales, customer support, finance, and even the tech area? I once worked on a flow or created a flow where I had a couple of developer agents interacting with each other, and even that was like insane to watch. But there are even more complex use cases or areas where you can have, like you mentioned, hundreds of agents. What do you see there at the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give you a general answer first, and then I'll drive into a little more detail. But the answer that most folks would give is just about anywhere. I think to a certain degree, we're limited by our creativity and our imagination. So that's the general answer. It doesn't really answer your question, though. Let me try to see if I can give you a more specific one. Let me just couch this first. I see agents, I see organizations dipping their toe in before they dive in. So what we're going to see is I hope we do a little bit better than the death by 1,000 POCs that a lot of these LLM projects are going through. But I do see limited, at least in the next year to 2 years, I predict that there will be many examples of production implementations of agents, but they'll be limited and they'll be tested, because people do have to, although we may say we have the security and the trust, I think that takes, it has to be earned. It's not just a given. It has to be earned. So you're going to see limited POCs. Limited production capability, starting with POCs and then MVPs, the traditional course. But in the industries that I see most amenable to this are the ones where there's a lot of, I'm going to say paper, but when I say paper, I mean electronic documents moving back and forth. So I'm most familiar with financial services. So having worked in the insurance industry for a little while, there's a lot of paper. In paper being the physical analog, but now it's electronic paper, documents everywhere. So the simple handling of, first notification of loss, for example, in insurance, is a critical process. Now, is an agent going to do it all? No, but they're going to do pieces of that puzzle, and eventually they may do it all. So if you think about banking, and I'm quite familiar with that, opening a bank account in some organizations, depending on the rules and regulations of the jurisdiction in Canada, having gone through this a little bit just recently, it can take weeks. I don't think there was a day where I didn't have to do electronic signature on two or three documents. So the flow of documents are enormous. And what I do remember is there's always a person that I, that sent me the email that would call me later to say, hey, you forgot to sign that thing. Can you please do that? But the process was not like difficult. And it wasn't unpleasant. It just took a long, long time, and it required a lot of human intervention. Now, when I think of that human intervention, the people were wonderful, by the way, and it was wonderful to talk with them. But if I put my productivity hat on and look at this from a productivity lens, that's an example where agents can definitely play a role. Again, once they earn the trust that they can deal with sensitive data and the mechanisms are there to prove that, then they should be able to handle those documents, as opposed to somebody, you know, doing whatever, you know, filling out the forms and then doing, like, sending me an email literally to sign a document. That can all be done by an agent. And if I was late with a document, an agent should be able to check that out and then send me an email or a text. And then once I do it, they can actually go, okay, we're in the next step of the process. Why don't we start sending the next set of documents out? So opening up a bank account is something that I think everybody can intuitively understand, but there's a lot of complexity behind it. Know your customer rules, et cetera, that force a plethora of electronic documents to be created and manually handled in many cases. So banking and insurance, because it's an industry I'm most familiar with, there's lots of opportunity. I suspect healthcare, which I'm not familiar, so take this with a little bit of grain of salt, I suppose. I'm not an expert in healthcare, but it fits the criteria. There's lots and lots of electronic documents floating back and forth. I remember the example that Mark Benioff did. So this is his example, by the way, and I thought it was quite good, where he was. It was on one of the podcasts. I can't remember which one, but he explained how he had a foot injury, I believe it was, and he had to go in for an MRI, and he had to drink some liquid that allowed the MRI to be more effective. And he did his thing, and then 2 weeks later, somebody called him. Somebody then booked another appointment. You know, before that, even they had to remind him to drink a lot of liquid to get rid of that stuff that he had to ingest for the MRI. So he went through and said, well, we didn't need to have somebody phone me to remind me to drink a lot of liquid. It could have been a text. And then when they found the results, you know, they didn't have to have a person phone me to tell me to come in. They could have just said results are available. An agent could have done this. And if I didn't respond, they could, you know, do it continuously. I'm sure after 10 tries, maybe they'll have a real person call. But you get that understanding. And then when the results are in, and they want to schedule a second appointment, an agent can do that, and they can move the electronic flow of information back and forth. So the healthcare industry, I have to believe. And I can't speak to it in Europe, but in Canada and I think in the U.S. by extension, there's just a lot of documents floating all over the place. And that's classic with the power of LLMs to actually understand a document and the context of the document, even if it's handwritten. Today, what you have is an area that's ripe for agent innovation. So those would be the three that I would suggest. Undoubtedly, there's more.
Yeah, thanks for covering all those examples. I can also relate to like finance and insurance. There is a Berlin-based startup called Kern AI. They work on solutions specifically for highly regulated markets, because you need to be sure if somebody raises a question regarding an insurance, whether something is covered or not, the answer has to be 100% correct. So there shouldn't be like, hey, this is covered, of course, if it wasn't covered or stated in the initial contract. So there's a lot of complexity in there, but they work on pretty cool solutions. Same counts for what you stated, like in the finance area and everywhere where like paperwork is needed. And last but not least, I think last week on LinkedIn, somebody stated, Gen AI doesn't make sense in the healthcare industry because it's not 100% accurate. And I'm like, hold on for a second. I mean, there are, take that piece of technology and apply it where it makes sense, where you maybe don't need that 100% accuracy.
Yeah. I think also people forget that we people are error prone.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's errors in the process today, but here's what I would say is, if I look at my crystal ball again, foggy as it may be, there's a few things that are absolutely clear. Is the capability of LLMs, again, as the LLM gets more powerful, the agent gets more powerful. The capabilities of LLMs are growing exponentially. We've seen that. Okay. The most interesting part, though, is the cost of LLMs have decreased exponentially. So in any industry where you see that type of environment, decreasing costs and increasing capability, what you're going to see is dramatic innovation. And I think what you're going to see is things like specialization. And what that means also, especially in the four walls of an organization, when we apply techniques that we know work today, RAG, for example, or, you know, we can go sophisticated with Graph RAG and a few other capabilities. But once the agent is, you know, a year from now, it'll be, you know, half the cost and twice the capability, and it'll have access to corporate data. And we know if you use RAG techniques to fill in the context properly, the agent gets much, much better and the hallucinations decrease rather dramatically. So the fact that capabilities and capacities will increase rapidly and the costs will decrease rapidly. Agents will be more specialized. In other words, they'll have LLMs that'll be smarter in that particular context, and they're going to take advantage of the corporate data that's available today using techniques that have been proven to work to reduce things like hallucinations. I think we're going to get to the point where they will be more reliable, more accurate than even the best person could possibly be. So that I would say it'll never be probably perfect. Human systems are not perfect, but that's not the bar. The bar is it better and more cost effective than what we have today? And I think the answer today is yes. And I can almost guarantee in a year or two, it'll be absolutely yes.
Perfect. Thanks for that. Talking about like developing agents and what needs to be considered there also, regarding your framework and the whole concept behind the mesh, what's your recommendation for tech leaders, for business leaders, for tech people when they start developing their own agents? What's like a blueprint where you would say, let's focus on these three or five items and then you're good to go?
Sure. So I'm going to broaden that a bit, not just executives, tech executives or tech leaders, but also developers, because I think it applies. And I think you have to have, you know, all oars in the boat rowing in the same direction, I suppose. But I think there's a few things that when you think of your roadmap for this type of capability, your agent roadmap. And I've done this so many times in this context, AI context, APIs. The first step in any of these is to understand your vision. What are the outcomes you want to get? And then formulate a strategy and an architecture and a prioritized list of business outcomes that you want to actually have. That doesn't take long. In fact, we've done that, you know, anywhere from 8 weeks to 12 weeks. And you get a roadmap out of that, strategy and a roadmap. And you get an architecture and you get a list of prioritized outcomes. And then the next, we typically do 3 to 4 things in parallel after that. There's a technology stream, which is probably the one that most people are comfortable with. Most people listening to this podcast, I would think, are going to be comfortable with that. So that says, what's the toolkit? How do I build agents? What are the standards I want to do? What is the ecosystem management capability that I want? And then how do I industrialize that? So that's the tech stream. That's the one everybody starts with. But you have to do a bunch of other things. And if you don't, you will fail. The next one is what I call the factory stream. So this says, if I got this technology platform, how do I build things properly? And then once I've figured out how to build them properly, how do I actually build them at scale? So we call that the factory stream, which culminates in a rollout of, you know, agents at scale. The next one, which I would argue is probably one of the most important and probably the most overlooked. When I was doing my data mesh work, and I think this directly applies here, the author of Data Mesh said it's a socio-technical capability. Agents are a socio-technical capability. What that means is there's a technical part, but there's a social part to it. And here's the thing. Everybody thinks the tech is 80%. It's not. The tech is 20%. The technology we know we can cobble together. We do that. We've been doing that for 50, 60 years with technologies. I mean, new tools come every day, but we know the tech. I will be honest with you. That is 20% of the problem. Okay. 80% of the problem, and if you don't address it, you will fail, is winning the hearts and minds of not only the developers, okay, and not only the managers, and not only the executives and the directors, but the business sponsors, the folks who actually have to deliver the revenue for the organization. That part is we break down into a few pieces. The first one is, what is it, you know, to support the first POCs and the MVPs, what does a team actually look like? What does an agent delivery team actually look like? Well, clearly there's an agent owner. There's an agent developer, but there's a bunch of engineers, maybe some platform folks, there's a release manager, et cetera. So what does that team look like? And as you deliver your first POC and your MVP, you're going to figure that out, and you'll be able to cookie cutter. But once you've done your first team structure, the next one is once I get two teams, I need to work out my operating model. So how do these teams actually interact? Okay. What are the performance metrics? What are the incentives to allow them to grow the ecosystem and nurture it? So that operating model is crucial. And then once in parallel, you have the operating model, you have to work on that governance, or as I call it, certification framework. That has to be done, and it has to be done as soon as possible. And there's great analogs out there. Almost every organization has a data governance capability. You know, use that as best you possibly can. Look at the analogs, as I mentioned, the Underwriters Lab, the Canadian Standards Organization. I'm sure there's equivalents in the EU. Those are analogs that you can use to build your governance capability. So that's the tech stream, the factory stream, the operating model stream. The last but not least, but I think is actually quite interesting, but most folks forget about it, is what we call a socialization stream. What this says is you want to, as with any of these things, you start with building your first data product, but if you build it successfully, you hopefully can get support to build the next. So socialization of your successes is crucial. That's lunch and learns, that's podcasts like this. It's internal meetups. It is, you know, reaching out and having lunch with an executive and explaining what you've done, but structuring it in a way that is more formal is something that we found is kind of one of our secret sauces when we do kind of the work that we do. But that's what developers, that's what managers, executives, and business folks actually have to do. Starts with the strategy and the outcome, and then the streams of work that build the tech, build the delivery capability, and then build the organizational capability and strength that allows you to actually build agents and the agentic mesh at scale.
Awesome. I mean, I love the 80-20 thing that you were mentioning. So let's be honest, in our daily business, we have a lot of talking about technology and tech. So it's like the other way around. So 80% talk about tech and 20% all the other stuff. But I'm fully with you, and I celebrated it. I was smiling because that's so important to not forget about that. I just had a chat, I think that was past week. It's a company, not very tech savvy, I would say, but they approached me and they were like, hey, we know that we need to learn about all the Gen AI stuff, but we don't know where to start. We don't have the tech people internally. There is so much potential, so much ideas, so many ideas that we have, but we actually don't know where to start. And they mentioned they have a couple of people, just a handful, prompting on a daily basis, working on their documents with some of the tools out there. And I did something similar that you were mentioning at the end. I was like, do you have the means in place to spread the knowledge and the achievements in the company? And the answer was no. I was like, do you have like a lunch and learn or like 1 hour a week where people like them can share what they achieved, time savings, analyzing documents instead of working hours on Excel sheets, stuff like that. And they were like, gosh, that's so easy to achieve. And I'm like, yeah, and start there, spread the word, create internal ambassadors talking about what they did. And you will figure out that more people will join them and share their know-how and their achievements. And that's, let's be honest, that's not about tech. That's about bringing the people together, sharing the knowledge, and giving them the trust and the means that they are okay to try out that stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that it's okay to also fail. And what does failure mean? In 99% of the cases, it's learning. And it's not like the house will burn down or the office building. It's like, I failed. I didn't achieve the goal that I was aiming for. Bring those people together. And they were like, we will start that immediately. And I, last but not least, I also said, what about internal communication? Are you using Teams, Viva Engage, Slack, whatsoever? Create a channel where those people can interact with each other and share their knowledge. And that's the very beginning to also build trust.
Absolutely. It's almost like we've rehearsed this or something.
Yeah, we're going to meet.
Exactly the same. You're spot on. Perfect. Perfect. I couldn't have said it any better.
Yeah, so time to meet, I would say. Let's fix a date and let's sit down, talk more deeply about that stuff, and I will bring a cajon or a drum set and you will play. Exactly. Awesome. I mean, there is so much more we could touch base on, but there are one more thing that I always do at the end of a recording, and that's like I'm starting two sentences. And you're free to, what's the right term? Like finish them or
complete the
sentence. Thanks for that. So I hope it's okay to do that with you as well.
Yeah, sure. We'll give it a whirl.
Awesome. So let's start with the first one. People and businesses in general need to learn about AI agents because...
Because they are coming and they're going to deliver immense value and you want to be ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it.
Love it. Right, the second one. In the future, AI agents will be?
Smart, intelligent, capable, and better than you think.
Awesome. Spot on. I love it. I love it. Eric, thanks a lot for that recording. There is so much potential in here, and I will spend some hours thinking about what you've written down, what you shared with us in the recording. So I guess there's a high potential that we will talk again.
Yeah. Well, Nicholas, I'd love to come on again if you would have me. And I do hope that we meet one time. But right now, I'll just say thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to share with you. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. That was a lot of value. And of course, I will link all the material in the show notes, like the article that you mentioned, your LinkedIn profile and some more stuff. So for our listeners, thanks for listening. There was a lot of value in here and a lot of stuff you should also think about and work on. And thanks for listening. And I would say, till the next Business Biome episode, take care. And yeah, talk to you soon.
Thank you.
If you're hearing this message, it means you have listened to our new episode until the end. For that, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you have any questions about the topics discussed today, or if you want to follow our projects, you can find us on the web at futurebrains.io and of course on LinkedIn. I hope you enjoyed this talk as much as I did. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a new episode. I would also appreciate a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Please also share this episode with your network. Also, let me know what topics I should cover in the future. See you next time on the Business Biome Podcast.